Pat, always good to hear your voice. I wish you were at a ballpark or something right now, and we were talking with crowd noise in the background. But first of all, how are you and yours keeping through all this?
Hunkered down. It sounds like you and Stephen and Richard are doing well, and I just hope, you know, everybody's kind of observing social spacing and keeping their distance. So, you know, we can all be in this together and try to get this thing behind us, you know, hopefully in the near future. But if it does stretch out, you know, that things will work out and that it'll all come back in a very positive way.
Hey, Pat, look, you've seen so many spring training, so many starts of the season, so many opening days, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have any idea what this will look like when we come out of this and how pitchers and hitters are going to prepare? Like, do you have any idea what the plan is going forward? Maybe not for the number of games, et cetera, but for how the guys are actually going to go about doing their work.
Well, what we talk about now is it's a lot different than it was even, you know, going back 92, which is almost 30 years ago. I mean, the guys are in much better shape. Their compensation is such that they don't have to take another job when they go home in the off season. Consequently, you know, they can train year round. And so I think these guys are a lot better shape than the players 30 years ago. So I saw something where somebody suggested that, you know, it might take a month to get in shape. I think a couple of weeks and these guys will be ready to go.
You know, Pat, it was different. Like 94, obviously, they just, after the strike, they pushed spring training back. So it was kind of the normal. It might have been a little short. I don't remember, maybe by a week or so, but it was essentially spring training. But I was thinking, wondering about way back. What happened in 81 when they stopped mid-season with the strike and then restarted? Because that maybe is a little closer to what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I can't. I'm good at 30 years. I'm not too good at 40 years.
Me either.
but I know in 81 when we had that work stoppage, it was we played a couple exhibition games. We played a game in the Mets, and we played another game. We might have played two games down in New York against the Mets. I'm not sure, but it was a very, you know, brief period. I wouldn't think that it was no more than 2 weeks. And if I had to take a guess, I would say it was a week to 10 days, something like that.
Richard.
Pat.
And what they can do is expand the rosters. If they want to go up to 30 players, I mean, we're dealing in a different situation that we've never dealt in before with this virus. So consequently, I mean, if they want to take the roster to 30 players or 32 or 33, I don't think it matter if, you know, give them that sort of possibility for the first, the first month of the season when we do start.
Pat, what do you think? What are the, like, sort of the, I mean, I'm sure the answer is like 1,000, but what do you think are the three most important things on general managers' minds right now?
Well, right now is, I think one is, they're not sure what's going to happen. I think they want to give as much information as they can to the players and to the employees of the club. But right now it's a very fluid situation, and and I can't fault anybody, MLB or even the governments, both of Canada and the United States. This thing's a very fluid thing, and it's a very unique situation they're trying to deal with. So, consequently, there has to be a lot of flexibility. But I think the GMs would like to keep their, as I said, their players and employees more informed on what's happening. But right now, and again, there's not much coming out of the office. The other is, I think, is that on their minds is the fact that if we come back too quick, that somebody will sustain an injury that won't be just a 10-day DL or a 15-day period. It'll be longer than that. And the third is, what's going to happen with the union and MLB in regards to service time, and that some players, need service time to become a free agent. So I think that's on the mind of the GMs looking into the future.
A reminder that tonight at 10 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet Now, Blue Jays Classics, the 1992 World Series, Jays at Braves Game 1, will be replayed. Pat, we have been replaying some of the great Blue Jays games from that era, starting with the Roberto Alomar home run off Dennis Eckersley, and we spent a lot of time talking about how important that was, you know, sort of in the history of this team. We know about Joe Carter's home run. We know all these things. We know about the collapses down the stretch in September or anything. Is there a Blue Jays moment, and I'm going to ask you to dig deep into your memory here. Is there a Blue Jays moment that we don't make a big enough deal about in your mind?
Well, I think they do. I think they do make probably a bigger. They all talk about Joe Carter and Alomar. I think kind of sandwiched in between that is Game 2 of the World Series in '92. Eddie Sprague hitting a home run in the ninth inning to win the game off Jeff Reardon. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about that, the guy that was on base is a guy who at that time was a free swinger. He wasn't a guy that would walk very much. Derek Bell. He walked in the ninth inning of that game down in Game 2, and that was a big blow, because if we don't win that game, we're down 2-0 going back to Toronto. And the other was the Winfield, looking back over the history, he struggled in playoff games, and coming through with that double off Charlie Liebrandt in the 11th inning of that game in Atlanta in Game 6, those were big blows. But so they talk about Alomar and Carter, and certainly they would be in Blue Jay history the ones you remember. But I think Eddie Sprague and Winfield's hits in the 1992 World Series were big.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. Derek Bell scored the winning run in the Alomar home run game too. It's funny, we're catching up on some of this stuff that those of us who are writing the games in the press box, you might have missed some of it when you were writing. But I think he scored the winning run in the 11th inning.
He came into that game as a pinch runner, did he not?
No, he led off the 11th. There was he pinch hit in that game, and he had 11 pitch at bat in that game in Oakland before Alomar in the 11th inning. And Maldonado, I believe, got a base hit, and then Borders hit a sac fly in the 11th inning to win that game. Devon White was on base when Robbie hit the home run to tie the game in the ninth inning. But Derek Bell got two important walks, one in that game in Oakland and another in Game 2 of the World Series in Atlanta.
Pat, what was the biggest difference between that team and the 91 team, which was a really good team, you know, went into the ALCS with, we all thought they had a real shot at beating the Twins in the ALCS. Of course, that was the year Morris had such an amazing postseason. But when you look at the 91 versus 92, what's the biggest difference?
You know, I thought we had a great time, too, a great chance, 91, to win that thing. I was very disappointed after the way we played during the season and the way we handled Minnesota during this season. I thought that we had a great opportunity. You know what? I would say a big part of it was the addition of Jack and the addition of Winfield. It was two veteran guys who had been down that road before and knew how to win and knew what it took to win. And so, you know, being one with the Yankees, the other with Detroit, and having won in 91 over Minnesota, I think those two additions from a mental standpoint and their leadership on the club, I think that that played a part in 92.
So, Pat, in your position right now, I don't know how much time you spent around the Phillies this spring, but I did want to ask you, obviously Joe Girardi taking over as manager, and he brings a lot of obviously a lot of credibility, to say the least, but a bit of a change, I think, in mindset from the guy he's replacing. What were the expectations, and I shouldn't say what were, don't want to put it in the past tense, what are the expectations for the Phillies this year? Because when Joe was hired, you know, I think a lot of us looked at it and kind of thought that might have been the guy that maybe should have had the job all along.
Joe's an interesting study. He's a little bit old school, a little bit of new school, a little bit of R&D. And that was in his resume when he came over from the Yankees, because the Yankees are probably as heavy into research and development, you know, as anyone in baseball. So, you know, I think Joe knows how to make a balance. And that's what I've always said. You know, I'd be old school. But all I'm saying is that there has to be a balance between the analytics part of it and the visual observation of the players. It can't be all one way. So I think Joe knows the balance. I think, you know, Joe comes from a winning situation. I think he's got very, very high character, and I think he demands the same thing from his players. So I didn't spend a lot of time in spring training, but actually I didn't go to spring training at all. But the reports I keep hearing back is it's a nice refreshing change, and we were looking forward to open the season. So you know, our situation is, I mean, probably Atlanta and Washington on paper look better than we do, and so you know, if we play a little better and things kind of get a bumpy in the road for Washington and Atlanta, then maybe we could move up. But right now, you know, we're probably, if everybody stayed healthy, we probably have a tough time getting by Washington and Atlanta.
Pat, so much of the game now is statistically oriented and analytics bent. I wonder from your perspective, how do you scout makeup, or how do you scout someone who could fit in on chemistry, and is that still an attribute that gets valued the way launch angles and all this other stuff does?
I don't know. I don't know that. For me, character is makeup. That's what character is all about. That's your makeup, and you have to do a lot of investigating, you know, to find out that information. And it's very difficult to interpolate through numbers what somebody's makeup is. You have to visually observe that player, and you have to do a lot of background search. And people would ask, well, what do you mean background search? You got to talk to the coach, you got to talk to counselors, you got to talk to teammates, you got to talk to fans, and get all the bits of information that make the puzzle come together. And if that's how you find out about their makeup. And then the other thing I used to like to do, I like to go to practices more than I like to go to games, because I can tell how the player interacts with his teammates. I can see how hard, if he is a good practice player, does he look like he's diligent? Does he look like that he wants to improve? And it's much easier to ask the coach if you go to a practice, see if he can make this adjustment. Would you just ask him to make this adjustment just for a minute and see if he can make an adjustment to give you some idea if this guy has some coachability about him. But the mental part of the game is so important. When I started out, 80% was physical talent, 20 was mental. And the longer I've been in it, it's 60-40, 60 physical and 40 mental. The mental is very, very, very important.